Okay, the time is now 6 minutes after 3 p.m. I am acting chair, and I am calling the meeting back into order. We have one final case. It's case number 23-108. So please come forward.
Thank you for your patience, all of you.
Thank you.
Okay, and for the record, please state your name, your agency, and your witnesses, please.
Thank you. Captain Doug Sobey for State Police, here with Officer Frazier of now of Darien PD, formerly of Trumbull PD, and Officer, can you pronounce that for me?
Bartosik.
Bartosik of Trumbull PD.
Any relation to Joe Bartosik, by any chance?
No, sir. No,
I'm not disqualified.
Come on.
Okay.
Can I get the spelling of both names? I'm sorry.
Yes, Bartosik is B-A-R-T-O-S-I-K.
Okay, and the other one?
Frazier is F-R-A-Z-I-E-R.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay.
And they're both officers?
Yes.
Thank you.
Issuing authority, you may proceed.
Thank you. This is, at first blush, a fairly standard case that we see where there is alcohol intoxication with a firearm included. On June 10th, 22, the appellant was observed sleeping in his running vehicle. Officer Frazier woke the appellant up and observed a revolver handle in his jacket pocket. The appellant had bloodshot eyes, slurred speech, and the odor of alcohol coming from his breath. He failed the FSSTs and was arrested, blowing 0.3273 on the first test and 0.3168 on the second one. The case, however, has a strange twist of facts in that the appellant testified at the time that he had, quote unquote, put a patient down as part of his duties as a PA, i.e. Assisted in some kind of euthanasia or assisted suicide. Further investigation revealed that probably not to be the case from what we can tell, but I think today's hearing will probably explore that a little more. What I would submit is it does show either there are severe issues going on with the appellant's perception of reality and possible legality of his actions, or he was fabricating events to the police and to others in this situation. Thank you.
Thank you. Sir, you can make a brief opening statement, a few sentences about what you're going to show in your evidence.
Not much, I have to tell you. Honestly, that day was an embarrassing, terrible day in my life. I was maybe in a blackout. I do not remember most of the situation on that day. I can tell you immediately what happened at the beginning of the day and then thereafter. I cannot argue with their facts. I read them over. And I guess that's the beginning.
Okay, let's hear what he has to say, and we'll go from there. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to call Officer Frazier, please. Officer Frazier, could you tell me how long at the time you wrote this report? I guess we're going to do some math here. You were employed by the Trumbull Police?
I believe it was about 4.5 years.
And you're now with the Darien Police Department?
Correct.
Okay, during this time, though, you were fully post-certified and completely a full member of the Trumbull Police Department?
Correct.
Thank you. Could you describe to me what happened generally on a event on June 11th, 2022 involving the appellate?
So I was assigned to an afternoon speed enforcement detail in the area. I had pulled over a vehicle nearby, and while I was dealing with that traffic stop, a motorist approached me and said that I believe it was on Isinglass Terrace, there was a vehicle running with somebody who appeared to be passed out in it. When I finished with that stop, I did a welfare check on the vehicle where I approached the appellant, woke him up, asked him what he was doing. He expressed that he was a physician's assistant doing some type of home visits, providing home health care, and he was having trouble accessing his patient files, knowing where to go next, so he was on hold with his company trying to troubleshoot something. I detected an odor of alcoholic beverage. He had bloodshot eyes, slurred speech. And when I asked him for his identification, he leaned over and I observed the butt of a revolver in his, I believe it was a sweatshirt pocket. I immediately asked him to put his hands on the steering wheel, and he was very compliant, knew exactly why I was asking him to do that, explained that he was carrying the gun because sometimes he goes to bad areas. I removed the gun from him, detained him briefly until my other unit officers responded. We brought him to just up the street to a more level area perform SFSTs, which he didn't perform to standard. We transported him to booking, where we processed him. When my sergeant, who was on scene, inventoried the vehicle, he found a significant number of, like, the one-shot alcoholic beverage nips, and then discarded close by. There were the same brand that were consumed already, that were discarded near the vehicle. We did the standard booking procedure where we administered the A44, the Draeger breathalyzer test, where he blew over a 0.03, or I'm sorry, a 0.3 each time for each test. He was subsequently processed for the DUI and the possession of the firearm while intoxicated. From there, it was the end of that shift. I was starting my regular patrol shift on the evening shift, where I was assigned to communications as a desk officer. The appellant was released and went to, I believe, his in-law's house by taxi. And then I was contacted by the appellant's wife, who described that she is also a medical provider, a nurse. And she was concerned with, as a mandated reporter, that the appellant described to her that just prior to us arresting him, the appellant had what she described assisted in some type of physician-assisted euthanasia or something to that effect in a hospice type of environment, which she didn't believe was typically within his scope of practice in the company he was currently working for. She continued to describe to me that he had had previous instances with local hospitals he had been employed in, where he was dismissed from those positions for being intoxicated while at work, and she was troubled to find out that he had been arrested while working this time as well, and she was worried about the health and well-being of this supposed patient. Through a bunch of running around with his company, and because he also did not have his phone on him, so we did not have a way to contact him. It was in the impounded vehicle. Did some running around with his company. Eventually, Officer Bartosik and our Lieutenant Smith went to the in-law's house, went to the impound yard with the appellant, and attempted to access his work files to later discover the name of a patient through an in-house search. It was determined it was the residence that he was parked outside of. An officer was dispatched to that location and determined him to be alive and well. His wife wasn't sure if it was a symptom, if he had imagined the situation due to a symptom of his alcohol abuse, or if it was something that he fabricated as an excuse as to why it happened, to sort of mend the stress on their relationship. But once it was determined that there was no unknown or unreported death, that was the extent to our investigation.
Thank you. Just backing up a little bit, and without reaching a medical conclusion here, because sure. I'll ask Dr. Conrad to do that a little bit perhaps, a level of 0.3 a breath alcohol test, is that, in your training experience, indicative of any, I don't want to say medical condition, but any tolerance for alcohol? It's unusual being conscious at that level.
Typical, I would be, that would be somebody we would be sending to the hospital because of the impairment level. I was surprised how able he was to hold a conversation, be very compliant with us the whole time. I would have expected a much lower, still over the limit, but a much lower number.
So in your training experience through, like, the national course, the federal curriculum that we all take for DUI, that level would generally kill a standard person that was not experienced with drinking, correct? A normal body weight, et cetera.
In my experience, it could be if somebody wasn't somebody who had a high tolerance.
And then at a minimum, probably unconsciousness for
most
people.
It would be likely.
Okay. Nothing further, actually.
You have a chance to ask her any questions if you want.
No.
Okay. Great. The board have any questions? That was a very good report.
Officer Bartosik, if I may call him.
Go ahead.
Could you describe the actions you took investigating this case?
Absolutely. My interactions with the appellate occurred after he had been released from Trumbull Police Department. again, as Officer Frazier had mentioned, myself and one of the evening shift lieutenant had gone to the residence in Bridgeport where the appellate was staying. We were permitted entry to the home by the homeowners, made contact with the appellate while he was, I believe, asleep in a bedroom, had to wake him up and began the interview process. It was a consensual encounter. I believe he was Mirandized by the lieutenant on scene due to the nature of the issue and the potential loss of life or someone being out there that may need assistance. So at that point, the interview was conducted at the residence in Bridgeport. The details never seemed to really add up too much. There was inconsistent time frames, locations of where it may have occurred. At one point, it was determined that it might have happened in Stratford. We were unable to get a clear answer. At one time, I do recall asking the appellant what day it was, and he was unable to answer that question immediately. At that point, the only option we had was to transport the appellate to the tow yard, which is also located in Bridgeport, where his vehicle was impounded. The tow company was able to permit us access. The appellate was then able to retrieve, I believe it was an iPad and other documents from the vehicle. However, the iPad wasn't working and had no information and didn't show anything matching up with what we were being told. And there was, I believe, a hand-scribbled notes on a spiral notebook or something to that effect. And again, none of it matched up with the information we were being provided. So at that point, it was determined that we have nothing further to go on to establish whether or not this incident did or didn't occur, and all of the other leads that myself and other officers have looked into have gone nowhere. And at that point, we transported the appellate back to the residence in Bridgeport where he was staying.
Officer, going purely beyond the factual basis, do you have an opinion either for or against of whether this was a fabricated story or was something else? What was your sort of investigative hunch, if you might testify to that, what this whole story ultimately represented after finding all these facts?
We were not presented with a single piece of evidence that would suggest that this incident did in fact occur. And based upon that, we had to exhaust all possible options given the serious nature of the allegation. However, we were not presented with anything that would suggest that this did in fact happen. And later information became available. I believe it was from, I don't want to testify to something that I wasn't present for, but I believe information became available later on showing that the appellate didn't even have any appointments scheduled for that day. So there was an issue with record keeping on that part, but there was nothing supporting anything that was said, and at that point we had to determine it was more so of a hoax, or if that's the proper term to use, I guess, in this setting, but fabrication or cover story, rather.
Having dealt with the appellant, could you opine on whether you believe it was a hoax for sympathy purposes, a hoax to mislead the police, or simply a hallucination, possibly, that he had intoxicated?
The details continued to change. I believe I stood on the front porch of the residence in Bridgeport with the appellant while he had a cigarette. And again, the time frame changed, the location changed, and nothing really seemed to have any kind of grounding to it or investigative value to it. So it just seemed more and more like some sort of cover story.
Cover story. Thank you. Nothing further.
Would you like to ask him any questions?
Either for both of them or either of them. Did any of you ever hear me say that I did this action, or was all based on my ex-wife, I mean, my current wife at the time, her telling you guys this, reporting it to you?
Sir, you retold the story in my presence along with the presence of Lieutenant Smith from the Trenton Police Department.
I was made aware of it by his, I guess now, ex-wife when she called in, and that's what spurred the secondary investigation. But due to his phone being impounded, and I was confined to our communications center at that time.
So you didn't hear him?
I did not hear it from him. He didn't disclose it on scene. Okay. It was a mandated reporting, as she described it.
Thank you. Any other questions of the...
No.
Okay, board, have any questions?
One. But he actually related to you that he gave a patient some type of narcotic.
I believe it was morphine.
Morphine?
Yes. Yep. It was a dose of morphine for a patient that he described as being on hospice care, I believe. Dying of, or soon to die of cancer or something to that effect.
And he actually described that to you?
He described that to Lieutenant Smith, who was directly interviewing him at the residence, but I was present at the residence as well.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir.
Any other questions? Okay, now it's your turn to tell us whatever you'd like us to know.
Aside from being totally embarrassed about this entire situation, a couple of days prior to this whole incident, I discovered my ex-wife was cheating on me, and she asked me for a divorce. Work was horrible for me, and my father was very ill. I had to go down to Georgia to visit him. My work wouldn't let me because I was contracted, and it was a one-month job, and, you know, you can't go, you can't go. The morning of the incident, I do recall seeing one or two patients. Can't remember, one or two. I called my work. I asked them again if I can take a leave of absence. They said no, or else you have to terminate the contract. And I said, then that's what I would do. I was distraught. I hadn't slept well in a while. And there was a liquor store, I think it was like a block down, that I had passed earlier. I went there. I bought a whole bunch of nips of vodka. I drank them in my car, just wanting to get some sleep and clear my mind, and figured I'd wake up later in the evening and try to piece things back together. At some points, I don't recall interacting with the officers when they arrested me. I recall little bits, and they breathalyzed me at the facility itself. And then everything else was sort of in and out, honestly. So I can't say that they were wrong. I was right. They were right. I can tell you that I've never had any problems with the law. I've never had any driving violations. I can tell you that that day was the worst day, but also a blessing in disguise, because it's opened my eyes to the fact that I was an alcoholic. And I went down after that, after I got released, I went down to Georgia to visit my dad, who passed away shortly thereafter. I came back, I checked into a detox, then went to a rehab facility, and I can happily say I'm two and a quarter years sober right now. And that was a bad period of my life. I honestly don't think I harmed anybody at that. At my capacity at that job was just to evaluate for history and physicals for a healthcare insurance company. So I doubt that that was what I did, actually. I don't know if I've confabulated that story. I can't honestly recall it at all. I think I was in like a blackout type of situation. I do regret that I had to waste everybody's time with this and embarrass myself, but I am happy that it opened my eyes to, you know, I had a problem. I was able to take care of it. And that's all I got.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Questions?
Sir, was it your practice at the time to become intoxicated while carrying a firearm?
No.
No. No. So would you take the firearm with you to work on a regular basis?
On these visits, yes. I was all over the city, in bad places in Bridgeport and good places in Trumbull. It's always carried with me, yes.
Okay. And you said you're not sure if you confabulated the story or how it came about. Can
Correct.
You describe your present sense impression of when the police arrived and your wife telling them all this, how you came up with the story? What were you thinking at the time? I'm trying to understand your state of mind.
I was a confused state of mind. I was going to agree to anything because I really didn't know what was going on. So whatever, you know, my wife said, it was, you know, okay, it must have happened.
So you don't think you participated in, like, a physician-assisted suicide?
Correct. Highly unlikely.
Okay. Was that in the scope of your duties?
No, not at all.
It was a wellness company, right? You take blood pressure and check insurance information.
Right, and check their medication list and do a history and physical and then report to the company.
Okay. What have you done specifically? You said you're 2 years sober. Are you in active treatment or counseling right now?
No, I'm with AA. I have a sponsor. I work the steps.
Okay.
And that was after detox and rehab.
Did you enter the alcohol education program? I know you
I did.
That's an option for you to
I did have to get the Mothers Against Drunk Driving sessions, which I did.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had a year of probation. If I didn't get pulled over for anything or did anything wrong, then the DWI was nollied because I had a clean record.
Mm-hmm.
And then with regards to the firearm safety, the judge suggested that I take the firearm prevention safety course again, which I did, and so then he nollied that and said I could actually have my license and my firearm back. When I went to Trumbull Police Officer Station, they said no, it has to go through the board and everything else. So that's, I mean, do you need to see this?
No, but the judge ordered, stated.
If I wanted my gun and license back, then I would have to go through another
firearm. You have to go through the process. You didn't say you could have it back.
No, yeah.
Oh, may I review that?
No, this is not that. This is just the watch and pause.
Oh, okay.
That I attended the course, and I present that with my lawyer to courts, and then
I
acknowledged the
Can I just ask, did he say you could give your permit back, or he said he was going to nolly the gun charges? There's two different things.
Well, he nollied the gun charges, and I asked him, does that mean I can have my, you know, retrieve my property and get my permit back? And he said yes, so that's why I went to the Trumbull Police Department. I said, no, it's the Board of Firearms, and so then I went to this whole, to get here.
Yep.
Yeah, I would say that's probably accurate. You can get your permit back.
Yes.
Not ordering it. Yeah.
Right.
Not ordering
it. He's not going to prohibit it.
Yeah. And that was my understanding of it. I wouldn't want a erroneous order being entered here on the record.
That's the way I interpret it.
No, he said I can go back to the police department and retrieve my permit and my gun.
Okay. No further questions, thank you.
Questions by the board?
Are you continuing to be employed as a physician assistant?
Yes, ma'am.
And are you doing the same kind of work?
No, I'm working with Connecticut Mental Health Specialists. I'm a psychiatric PA, physician assistant. I've been there for 2 years. And I love it. It's much better.
Any other questions by the board?
I just
have one. The information we got, and just correct me if I'm wrong on this, is that when you bought the vodka, there were 28 vodka nips in the console of the car?
Probably. I remember buying a whole bunch of them at the liquor store. Yeah.
That sounds like a reasonable.
It could be, yeah.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Nice.
When you started drinking, you knew you had the gun with you.
Yes, sir.
And you continued drinking.
Yes. I didn't intend to leave my vehicle. I didn't think that, one, having the vehicle on is considered DWI, and two, having the firearm on me while in my vehicle would be a problem either. I didn't intend to leave the vehicle at all, and
you
hadn't
think
moved.
Having the gun after 20-something nips sitting in your car?
I was just going, I intended to go to sleep, which I did, and then wake up later during the day and, you know, just proceed with, you know, getting things sort of together with my life.
You also seem to say you don't think you participated in a euthanasia. You didn't say you didn't. You just
the events of the day are so.
As we sit here today, it's still possible. Is that what you're saying?
I don't think so. No, I don't think it's possible.
I don't think so.
For me to have done that, I mean, I wouldn't have done it even soberly.
There was some testimony about your probably ex-wife saying something about you were drinking at work.
Not true.
Other than this incident.
Correct.
So that's the first time that you were drinking at work?
Yes.
You mentioned you were an alcoholic.
Yes.
Tell me about that, your lifelong use of alcohol.
I've been drinking on and off on a regular basis for about 10 years after my first divorce. I had been a heavy drinker just in general, but I drank more alcoholically for 10 years up until this point. Almost every day after work, sometimes drinking till I fell asleep or passed out.
How many times did you drink while carrying a gun?
Well, in my own house, a couple of times, but outside the public, none.
Other than this case?
Correct.
So that was the first time that you
carried
a gun while after drinking?
I wasn't even planning on drinking, but I just needed to go to sleep and just try to get my brain, you know, reset.
Did you think about going home first?
No, I didn't. I didn't want to deal with my ex-wife at the time. Like I said, I found out she was cheating and she was asking for divorce, and I just didn't want to face her, especially the fact that I did quit my job that morning as well.
Oh, you quit because you couldn't get the time off? Is that what you said?
Correct.
I got you. Okay, thanks.
Any other questions? Or you can make a brief closing statement if you'd like.
I honestly hope that my good record prior to this incident and after this incident are noted, and I'm thoroughly embarrassed and ashamed of this, and I don't ever intend to put myself in that situation again. And thank you for listening, and you know, it's been a long day, but I read this whole book while I was here.
Thank you. Closing statement.
Thank you. So while the appellant has shown significant rehabilitation, and we applaud him for that, I do think this is at this time that we should uphold the denial here. There is a very disturbing gap of reality here that occurred during this incident, and I am not totally convinced by everything that was said today that it was solely due to alcohol this was going on. This was completely, to this day, as the chief pointed out, we're pretty sure that nobody died.
I'm not going to lie to you.
Right.
I can't say definitively, but that would be totally out of my practice, out of my scope, and
absolutely.
I would have done that even sober.
To me, that's concerning. So while I think you're going, I'm sorry, I'm drifting at the appellate. While I think the appellate is moving in the right direction here, that it's too soon to reissue at this time. Thank you.
This is a revocation here.
I'm revoking the revocation, whatever.
It's been 2 years.
Comments by the board?
I would just say that it's clear to me as a physician that the appellant at that time had a serious alcohol use problem, because 0.3 is incredibly high. Many a college student imbibing would be dead on the couch in the frat house. Mm-hmm. So it indicates a high degree of tolerance. And my sense is that he was confabulating, that he was had a confabulation syndrome, mm-hmm. that a person not so dependent or tolerant to alcohol would have at a lower level.
Mm-hmm. My concern, obviously, is to have drunk that much alcohol with a gun on you to the point where you completely blacked out and don't remember much of anything, and you could have done anything and not even known it at the time. You have any conscious recollection of it, and you've got a gun with you. That's a deadly mixture, and not just because of that much alcohol.
Agreed.
You, it could have hurt other people. So I think that justifies revocation of the permit, but that's not to say this is permanent. At some point down the road, a couple of years, you continue with the alcohol therapy, get that behind you, get a good record, you know, something written statement saying you're rehabilitated, it's not a problem, and reapply for your permit. And the odds are pretty good you'd probably get it. Can't guarantee that, but I think that's how I would feel about this. Any other comments?
Just based on the appellant's questionnaire, and you can correct me if that's mistaken, but
certainly.
It seems like you got your permit in 2021. Is that correct?
Approximately.
Okay. So you had your permit about a year when this occurred.
It feels like longer, but if you
say so. It
happened
in June of 2022. You got,
right,
you
okay.
Wrote your, so you're a permit holder for about a year when this occurred. Thank you.
Okay, I guess we'll vote. Chief Rosenzweig.
Issue authority.
Colonel Lewis?
I'm going to issue authority this time. I'd like to see just a little bit more time. 2 years is great. Congratulations. Just continue on the path.
Colonel Overton.
Issuing authority.
Mr. Gray.
Issuing authority.
Dr. Conrad.
Issuing authority at this time. Congratulations on taking care of yourself.
Thank
and
you.
Being patient to wait all this time.
Yes. If there's anything specific that you'd like to see next coming up, or?
My own perspective is I'm voting issuing authority at this time. Continue your track record, and if you choose, you could reapply as Attorney Sinetti was saying at a future date. And I think if you have a good track record, that would likely bode well.
And I vote issuing that, appreciating authority at this time. Yes.
Thank
so
you.
So thank you, best of luck to you.
Thank you, everybody.
Good luck.
Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. And that really was a good report.
It really
thank
was.
You. Yeah, excellent.
Well, we should teach you how.
I wish the others could have seen this first.
So what's my next?